After a lifetime of researching the dynamic and enigmatic world of light entertainment, I've decided to ditch my notebook and meet the people who inspire me. What makes them the people they are? How do they feel about the show business landscape in which they find themselves? And in a world where anyone can be a star, is there still a need for performers who have universal appeal? Come with me on a journey of discovery as I get a unique insight into Britain's favourite stars with a little help from my glamorous assistants. Yeah, well, I say glamorous, more like hazardous. And of course, we'll have a bit of fun along the way.
Business tycoon and entrepreneur Theo Pafitis became a household name in his own right in 2005 when he joined BBC Two's Dragon's Den for over 7 years alongside fellow business heavyweights Peter Jones, Deborah Meaden and Duncan Ballantyne. His entrepreneurial pedigree more than qualified him to take his seat among the business elite, being the chairman of Ryman, the UK's largest supplier of home and office essentials, and the parent company of DIY chain Robert Dyers. I was interested to hear from Theo about everything from his humble beginnings as a Greek immigrant to how he deals with wealth and fame in 2018. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Theo Pafitis.
So, let's go back to the very beginning. You were born in Cyprus in 1959 and moved to England when you were nine. As a child, what were the differences?
No. I was six.
Six, okay. What were the differences as a child between sort of an English and a Cypriot upbringing?
It's chalk and cheese. Because don't forget, 1966 wasn't a million miles after the Second World War.
Yeah.
and certainly in Manchester, in parts of Manchester, there was still very visible signs of war damage. So, you know, the war was still very much alive in the minds of people. Also, political correctness, as it's gone mad sometimes, hadn't even been thought of. People voiced opinions that in vast majority of cases were from ignorance and misinformation or just no knowledge at all.
Yeah.
So it was, you know, I came from quite a close community.
Yeah.
In Cyprus. And we come here and find out we had no family, and you were very much a foreigner, was a bit of a shock. But all I can say to you is that children are incredibly versatile, and it's amazing how you you deal with things, and you know you see things, you deal with it, and very very slowly you understand about the ways of life and the ways about this new country.
Okay, great. So we'll move on to the 80s. And like so many in the 80s, you made your first substantial amount of money through commercial property. What was it about this decade that made it so lucrative?
All the strange hairdos. Everybody had very, very strange hairdos. That's what I remember. it was the 80s were very much the... we came out of the dark 70s where we had the three-day week, the general strikes. We had a female prime minister, which was for the first time ever. We had a laissez-faire society coming up. And it was just like the swinging 60s where sort of the people getting rid of their inhibitions. The 80s were very much about the Big Bang, the opening of markets, social movement as far as people were concerned, and it really was. I'm not thinking of the right way to describe it. I mean, social mobility had just really hit people's eyes, aspiration.
Yeah.
You could actually move on.
Yeah. So, in 1995, you bought the company Ryman. What was it that made you think you could turn the company around?
I'd worked with a company previously in a concession basis with one of my other businesses. So I knew some of its issues. I also knew lots about its good points. And, you know, there's some companies you can never turn around. But this was one I was very, very confident with, that I knew if I bought it right, it would be right.
Yeah. And so you mentioned there about companies that couldn't be turned around. Woolworths was something that we wanted to talk to you about. And were you were one of the among the parties who declared a significant interest in taking over Woolworths in 2008?
Yeah, that would have been a big acquisition for us, and would have taken up quite a lot of my ability to finance it. But the problem with Woolworths was it was worth more dead than alive.
Yeah.
And if ever a company died because of mismanagement, that was one of them. I mean, the management just did not wake up. They really just... And you could see that in their accounts over the years. They were just living the dream.
So do you think that was the main downfall for Woolworths, then, not sort of the growth in online?
No, Woolworths would have had different issues going down the line if it had survived. But I'm pretty sure that it would have got over those issues. And what we've seen many, many companies, retailers open up. They're not a million miles away from looking like Woolworths.
Yeah. Okay. Josh just asked, how does a company like that seemingly go from sort of one of the biggest retailers on the high street to nothing in what seems such a short amount of time?
Josh, it wasn't a short amount of time. If you look at their accounts over the previous 3 years, you'd have seen that the management were throwing in the kitchen sink, and they were trading badly, and they were disguising how badly they were trading. If you read between the lines, so in some ways, the shareholders and the city should have actually changed the management years beforehand. But that's my personal opinion, not to get into any libelous situations.
Yeah.
So if it was me, I would have changed the management, because you could see they were actually dressing the accounts up unnecessarily. And they weren't making changes to the business. The business was running out of cash. They weren't taking the actions they needed to take. So it wasn't an overnight. It was a gradual deterioration.
Yeah.
And eventually a straw broke the camel's back, which I think was the credit insurers, if I remember correctly, decided to read the accounts properly.
Right, so moving on then. Let's talk a bit of football. In the last 20 years, there's been a bit of a phenomenon of successful businessmen joining forces with famous football clubs. We're talking sort of Lord Sugar at Tottenham and Mohamed Al-Fayed at Fulham. I've obviously got Roman Abramovich at Chelsea and the Glazers with Manchester United. What was it about Millwall that sort of took your fancy and made you want to help?
I always said if ever I want to get involved with a football club, they should lock me up somewhere. It was funny when Lee Manning, who was at Buckler Phillips, the administrators at the time, called me and he says, "You're a bit of a Millwall supporter, aren't you?" I said, "I lived in Peckham and I used to go to some games because it was nearest ground to me, but actually I also lived at Old Trafford when I was a kid. So in truth, I'm a Manchester United supporter, and my Millwall alliance is very much because I live not far from the ground."
Yep.
So I used to enjoy playing football. And yes, I've got a soft spot for them. He says, "Have I got a deal for you?" And I told him to get lost. And then a couple of days later, rang me up again and said, "Have I got a deal for you?" I said, "Lee, go away. I'm not interested." He said, "No, you don't realise that if you don't do this deal, I'm going to shut the club down. Because I've got no other interested parties.
Yeah.
So I said, well, you'll have to shut it down then. They said, why don't you come over a cup of tea? Come to the stadium. I said, no. Anyway, he persuaded me to go over to the stadium, and which obviously knew. And the rest, as I say, is history.
Yeah.
I'll have my heart rule my head.
Yeah.
I've got to tell you, it's one of the few times I'm so bloody pleased I did.
Yeah.
Because I had eight amazing years there that I wouldn't change for all the Team China.
And I suppose the 2004 sort of FA Cup final must have been a special day.
Against Manchester United.
Yeah.
And the semi-final against Sunderland at Old Trafford. We had Wembley appearances, we had European appearances, we could qualify for Europe, we had promotions. I mean, it was just... we had some shit times as well.
Yeah.
So I haven't forgotten those. But, I think back with huge fondness.
Excellent. So 2005, then you took your seat on the Dragon's Den on BBC Two. What were your first impressions of the fellow Dragons and the show?
Honestly?
Yeah.
What the star dot asterisk am I doing here? I thought, yeah, I've lost. This is one of the other times I let my head rule my head.
Yeah.
I thought, what? You know, it's so difficult doing TV because I've got ants in my pants. I fidget. I want to get to the point. And all you do is hang around for hours on end. Hours being non-productive. I can't tell you how difficult it was. You do end up making friends with people. Otherwise, you would go completely la-la, so crazy, with all the hanging around that goes on. But as it happened, it got a lot. And also, I was totally out of my comfort zone. So it was really tough, even for someone as confident as I was. But as I say, you know, it's easier with time. And in the end, the reason I packed it up was, after 9 series, I wasn't getting the buzz out of it again. I wasn't out of my comfort zone. So I always like to do something outside my comfort zone.
So was that a bit how you looked at people when you were investing? Because obviously you invested in quite a few people on the programme. Was that a thing that you looked for, to be out of your comfort zone, or did you try and stick to...
No, my head took over at that stage, not my heart.
Yeah.
I learned very quickly after the first couple of series was that I was more interested in the person than I was in the business. So I invested in people I liked. So I was more than happy to invest in someone I liked with an average idea than somebody I didn't like with a great idea.
Yeah.
Because you know, a good person will make a good idea work. A poor person with a great idea can't always make it work.
Right. What do you think you sort of offered in terms of assistance for those people?
Clarity, focus, advice, money, reality checks.
Yeah. How much do you sort of have to do with the business once it gets going, once you invest?
No, I'm not going to run their business. I don't run their business. I'm there to speak to me. I've got a team of people here that run my businesses. They can help out when they need help, but I don't run their businesses. If they can't run their businesses, then I shouldn't be investing in them.
Yeah. Okay, so looking back on your career, what would you say your proudest achievement is?
My proudest achievement?
Yeah.
I could give you all the stuff about my family, which I'm massively proud of.
Yeah.
I could give you all the stuff about the businesses. I'll give you all the stuff about the sporting side, the football side, the TV side, but honestly, from I have to say the personal perspective was being that young immigrant boy in a strange country and finding myself with a brilliant family.
Yeah.
50 odd years later, the guy from a hole in your backside walking the streets of Gorton to living in a magnificent home with, you know, a fabulous family around me.
Yeah.
I think everything else, quite honestly, fell into significance.
Yeah, it's lovely. Right. So, what's next for Theo Pafitis? What you got planned?
Well, if people here don't give me a heart attack today, and I survive the next couple of days, I'm hoping that I will find new challenges, as well as dealing with the new challenges that have been thrown up in business. We announced yesterday that I'm going to be the new Chancellor of Solent University.
Yeah, we saw that. Congratulations.
I've stepped down from the Board of Comic Relief to allow me to create the time.
Yeah.
And we also sold the business towards the end of last year, so I've been able to be out some time for that. And really do the things that I enjoy. And business at the moment for shopkeepers is incredibly tough.
Yeah.
Toughest I've ever seen it, to be honest. So I'm going to have to make sure I keep my eye on the ball.
A big thank you to our guest for being the subject of another Beyond the Title interview. If you like this, why not browse the website and see if there's anything else that takes your fancy. Don't forget to like our Facebook page to receive updates of forthcoming interviews and to see more information about me and what I do. Thanks again, and hopefully see you next time for another Beyond the Title interview.